This interview is between Wayne Darling of Lyle Printing Company and Don Bennett of Youngstown University over the history of printing in Salem for the Oral History Department of Youngstown University.
You want me to talk to this?
No.
Well, you mean that's sensitive enough. All right.
Mr. Darling, what is your background or schooling or preparation for the occupation of printing?
A good bit of it has been on-the-job training. I worked here as a boy, working, washing up printing presses and re-melting lead in what was known as a printer's devil. Then after school, I then worked in the holidays and things of that nature. After graduating, I sold advertising and commercial printing until 1953. Went into the Air Force and served 4 years. I was in charge of a base newspaper at Pittsburgh, at the Greater Pittsburgh Airport, known as the Greater Pitt Guardian. From there, I was transferred to Wiesbaden, Germany, and there I was a historian for the wing, known as a wing historian, and we compiled data from staff meetings and things of that nature. I then went to Paris, was transferred to Paris, and was stationed at Orly Airport, where I put out a base newspaper known as the Orly Oracle. I was discharged in 1957, came back to Salem, took over active management of the Lyle Printing Company and Farm and Dairy. My father died a year later, which put me in charge of the complete operation at age 24, and been at it ever since. And it's been a hit and miss, teach yourself type thing.
Do you think the fact that you did so much of this type of work in your armed service and the fact that your father was in the business led you into this just naturally, or has this always been your interest?
It's always been my interest and my father's influence, I'm sure, had a great deal to do with it. I don't know that I'd give the armed services credit for anything, because I think the die was cast before that. My interest has always been in the newspaper business and the printing business, and I guess it was just, you might say, dumb luck that it worked out so well for me.
What do you feel have been the biggest changes that have you observed in Lyle Printing since your father and you have owned the company?
Well, no doubt the biggest change has been our conversion of commercial printing department to lithography. We print 80% of our commercial work by the method of lithography, or litho as it is known, or, if you will, offset printing. And also the manner in which type is set. Most type nowadays is set from cold type, by the cold type method, and you photograph the type once it is on paper. This is accomplished by perforated tape, and the perforated tape is fed into a machine, a computer, and the type matter comes off in a large sheet, and then we photograph from that. Also, when we do set type for letterpress, which is our other method of printing, where you print direct from type, we now have linotype machines that will accept perforated tape, and therefore, not having an operator, it's faster, and we find that it works out better for us. So I suppose I would say that the most important changes have been in the field of our offset printing, our computerized typesetting, and our tape-fed line casting.
With the bringing in of this new type of machinery and the advent of the computer, what has this did to the role of the printer as a master printer, an apprentice, or their training.
Well, in some ways that's a little... I don't know. I'm not sure I know.
Do they still have to go through the occupation of...
Oh, yes. Yes, they have to go, through the, through that. But I can't think that it's much different. Maybe we're somehow, I get the idea that we don't have to be as exacting today in typesetting as we were 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when things were done from hot metal and everything had to fit together just right, or it wouldn't, what we call lift. If all the spaces weren't exactly right and the pressures weren't right, we couldn't lift the form onto the press from which we would print. And so I suppose I could say that you can be less exacting today and still get the same thing done and probably get it done faster.
What do you consider the specialty of your printing company?
Yeah. Well, the specialty of our printing company would be publications, books, business forms, brochures, flyers, things of that nature.
Now, you also have a farm and dairy.
Yes, that is right.
What part does this play in Lyle Printing, or...?
Well, Lyle Printing owns farm and dairy, and so farm and dairy becomes our product. We devote 60% of our time, I would say, on farm and... Well, no, let me change that. We have a commercial printing department that is aside and different than the production efforts of farm and dairy. So I would say that farm and dairy results in 60% of our income, maybe 70 at times, and the commercial printing is the balance. We spend a good bit of our time and effort on farm and dairy. It's our product, and the commercial printing is not, and I don't want to say fill, because it is not the fill. The commercial printing is our other adjunct.
You say that you have your own department in your farm and dairy. How long approximately does it take to print up your paper?
You mean the actual press time?
The actual work involved in getting the news, the information?
Well, it would vary. It would vary with the number of pages per issue. I guess I would say 4 days. 4 days, probably, of prep and to get the finished product. I think it's probably right for 4 days, but the same people that work on the newspaper do not necessarily enter into our job printing, our commercial printing effort.
Now, do you have reporters, or do people bring in the information for the farm and dairy?
Well, we have a full-time editor, and we also have 4 columnists, and then there, of course, are the 4-H contributors, things of that nature. People do submit things to us for publication, but I would think that with the exception of them, we have our 4 columnists, our editor, and that would be the bulk of it.
What is your role as publisher of the farm and dairy?
My role right now, and has been, is not that of writing columns or writing editorials. Mine is the interest of the business end of it. And most publishers are more interested in the business end than they are and the editorial effort.
Now, you are noted in the area, your farm and dairy is quite noted for the ads and so forth. Do you realize you have a large following? What is your circulation?
Circulation now is over 17,000 paid subscriptions. We have a great deal of interest in antiquing, the hobbyist, the collector, and certainly in farming as such. The paper was started out strictly as an agricultural weekly. The first issue printed in 1914 was called the Tri-County Farmer. A few years later it was changed to the Farm and Dairy Prophet, and then a few years after that it was changed to Farm and Dairy. At that time we catered almost 100% to the dirt farmer. In recent years, with the change of population, things of that nature, we've been catering somewhat to the antique collector and the hobbyist, as I said before, and one issue this year, we had 83 or 84 public sales in one issue.
Now this next question is a question I would normally ask to a daily newspaper. Do you consider yourself nonpartisan?
Yes, we are. We never back one political candidate over another. We've never taken a political stand in one direction or the other, although our editorials do lean toward the conservative side. We would probably be considered a conservative newspaper, but we don't back one politician over another.
Now, your paper is noted for having a, what you would say, conservative type reporting and also liberal at the same time. Do you do this for stimulation of the readers, or does it just come out that way?
Well, no, we have one columnist who is a liberal, and we have one columnist who is a conservative, our editor is a conservative, and our editorials are conservative. So I guess I would have to say that we lean more toward the conservative side, and we are happy about that and well entrenched in those views.
The next point, what would you consider your profits of the 30s and 40s and 50s? In regards to a type job and the cost and so forth?
Well, the costs, I suppose, as an estimate, we would hope that the results would be the same as they were 20 years ago, but in reality they are not, because of increased expenses that the company has. I would think that we make it more in volume than we do any other way. If we didn't have the volume, we wouldn't, frankly, be doing as well as we are.
Your machinery, you stated you had the computer press and so forth.
No, not computer press. Computer typesetting that is used more compatible with the offset end of things, the lithography end of printing, than with the letterpress end of printing.
Do you still use your Goss rotary press and your Ludlow press?
No, the Ludlow is not a press. The Ludlow is a piece of typesetting equipment for setting hot metal, and that's used almost entirely for the letterpress method of printing. The Goss press, yes, we use that every week, and it's the same type of printing press that a Metropolitan Daily would use, not as fast and not as modern, but certainly the same method of printing. Yes, we use our Goss rotary press every week.
Are you finding out that today, where other companies are having shortages and problems of getting materials, that the printing industry is having problems getting materials?
The only problem we're having getting materials is newsprint. Everything else seems to be coming along the same as ever. Going up in price a great deal, but it's available. The only thing that we're having problems with right now is newsprint. Fine printing papers for the commercial department seems to be coming through all right. Just they're very expensive. Newsprint is a real problem for us right now.
Do you try to stockpile when you can, or do you just depend upon your service?
Yes, we try to stockpile newsprint when we can, but it's a big problem. It's a big problem. We can't seem to get enough of it.
Is there any problem with storing newsprint, for example, say, dampness or so forth?
Oh, yes, yes. It has to be, the newsprint has to be kept dry, and we like to watch the humidity control of the newsprint. If it's too dry, it creates static electricity problems and won't print right in the paper, in the press. Well, the paper has a tendency to cling. So that's something we do have to watch. We don't read paper sit by an open door, for example, especially if it's open, because it will accept moisture and things of that nature, gives us problems. So there are things to be considered there.
Do you feel that the effect of rising inflation will play a part in years to come on the printing industry, or do you feel that it will stabilize or slow down?
Oh, I think it will continue to grow. There's a demand for printing all the time. I don't see it stabilizing at all. I think it's going to continue.
Do you think that there is a definite place in the future for the small, not small, but the individually owned printing businesses?
Oh, yes. Oh, sure. Not the least bit concerned about that. The big boys haven't come in to buy the small printers yet. At least I haven't. We haven't seen it around here. It isn't like with dairies and grocery stores and things of that nature. The mom and pop of grocery stores may be in trouble, but the small printers seem to make a good go. So I don't. And if you remember, there used to be a dairy. I'll bet back in Fairmont there were probably all kinds of dairies, and I'll bet there aren't too many now. And probably many of them have given away to the larger ones. I can remember in Salem when there were maybe 5 dairies at one time. Now there are none.
What do you remember as the most unusual printing job that Lyle Printing has ever undertaken?
That's difficult to say. When you have a commercial printing department, you do run-of-mine printing. You don't have exact specialty in your commercial department. I say our company has a specialty or a product, which is farm and dairy. But so far as the commercial printing department, we do run-of-mine printing. We'll print agreement contracts and business forms. I think the most unusual or outstanding thing we had once was the quantity of forms. We printed not too many years ago, 300,000 forms, 4-part forms, for the Columbiana County Medical Society. They were permission for the application of Salk vaccine. That must have been back in maybe 1953. And I remember so well when I got the order to print 300,000 forms. So I guess that might have been the most outstanding thing thing, or at least that's what stands out in my mind now, and I doubt that I'll ever get another order for 300,000 forms, whether they be two-part or four-part.
What is the most amusing incident that's ever occurred in your company?
I don't know. We've had some real funny things happen. I suppose maybe mix up on words, or words misspelled, things of that nature. But I can't, at this time, think of the most amusing thing that has happened in the history of the company, or in something that we might have printed and had a misspelled word or a line transposed some way that would have given an entirely different meaning, but I can't think of it right now. Seems to me, though, yes, I'll tell you something that happened was an interesting thing with an employee that was here at one time. During the war, we had difficulty getting help, as everyone did. A fellow came in here once from West Virginia, and not Fairmont, though, and he had a set of dentures that were bothering him, and he would remove his dentures and put them on the grind wheel and grind them for a while, put them back in his mouth, and they'd still hurt a bit. And then he'd take them out, and he'd file them occasionally until he finally got them to where he thought they were satisfactory. But that is the thing that I think about now, that of all the people that have worked here that were somewhat interesting, but so far as that is concerned. But I guess that's about it for now on that angle.
How long does you have your employees? How long do they normally work for you?
Yeah. In the last 3 years, we have lost three employees. One was 26 years service, another with 22 years service, and 3 months ago, one with 21 years of service. And so I guess they stay for a while. Our plant foreman has been here for 12 years. We've had other people for 10 years, 8 years, 5 years. So it seems that they do stay, and we're certainly grateful for that.
What do you remember from your father's depression days, the 40s, the problems that he had in the printing business?
Well, he came here in 1937 or 38, I guess it was, 38, took over the company, and it was in very bad financial condition. And there were just a lot of bills to be paid, and lots of customers to contact for business, and the worn out equipment. I remember that. I remember struggles of building up the business and so on and so forth. So I guess the thing I would remember is trying to collect bills and trying to meet payrolls. Now that, I remember that so well as being a problem, and I remember that even when I took over the company in 1957.
In the war years, what role did Lyle Printing play in World War II?
I believe that the finest role that our company played in World War II was printing and publishing a very helpful, useful newspaper during those days. I think that would have been the thing that we would have done that would have been the most help. We also did a great deal of commercial printing during those days when other companies were perhaps busy doing other things.
Do you remember if your father had any priorities in regards to getting materials or so forth, or did he have to just go out and get it the best way he could?
He had to go out and get it the best way he could. His biggest problem during the war was two things: the old paper problem again, and also getting help, getting satisfactory help. He had a terrible time getting employees during the war because, well, they all were in the service, and he had a terrible time getting help during the war. He had some difficult times. I'm sure everyone did. But at least that stands out in my mind.
The workers in your shop today, as in many of the other industries, they have had more and more unions. What type of union, or do you have a union today?
We do not have a union. We have what is known as an open shop. For all I know, I could have employees who are members of a union, and I don't know it. It doesn't matter. If they care to join a union, fine. They may, I guess. But we have an open shop. We do not have a union here.
Would you mind discussing what is a closed shop in regards to the printing industry?
Well, it would be the same as a closed shop in any other industry, where you must be a member of the union. An open shop is where it's an option.
Do you now give any benefits to your employees?
Yes, we do indeed. We have paid hospitalization, I guess it's Blue Cross and Blue Shield. You have to be and you have to work here 3 years, and after the third year, our company pays the entire benefit, the entire premium. It's on a prorated basis before that. We have a profit-sharing plan, which is, 6 years old now, and that has, I hope, gone over. We take a percentage of the profits and give it to the employees. They do not contribute to the profit-sharing plan, however. All from our generated profits.
Getting back to the farm and dairy, you as publisher, do you ever play the role as censor, since you mentioned the fact that you are conservative at times?
No, my editor is also conservative, so I don't have to be concerned about that.
Do you feel that...
Not at the moment. Now, when he's not the editor, then I would have to have quite a conversation, perhaps, with his replacement.
Do you feel that TV has an influence on your paper in regards to the fact that so much news coverage today is coming from TV?
Oh, no, and I'll tell you why. Our paper is of a local interest variety, and I remember well when John Kennedy was assassinated, we put one or two lines of type in the front page that we did indeed extend our sympathies to Mrs. Kennedy and to the Kennedy family. But we're not, I don't think there's been a thing in the paper, except maybe in the editor's personal column, about Nixon resigning and things of that nature. We just, it's of no interest to a weekly newspaper with a local interest flavor. We don't concern ourselves about national items.
What changes do you see for your newspaper in the coming years, or is it going to remain the same?
Oh, eventually we'll change some methods of production, but I see it staying somewhat the same as it is now. It's well received. Our circulation, as I mentioned before, is over 17,000 paid, and 15 years ago it was 7,000, so we've had a 10,000 increase in those years. I'm not much interested in changing it too much. Now, let me say this, that gradually it will change without us even knowing it. We'll take on a different complexion, but it will change so slowly that we'll probably not even know that it's changing.
Do you... choose change your types of typing or lettering often with the style or the trends? or do you specialize in certain types of type?
Now, you mean typeface?
Yes.
Oh, some, but not too much. To change type fonts is an expensive proposition, and we don't change our typefaces too much. We have some, but only when it's convenient and advantageous.
In your newspaper, what style of print do you use there?
All right. I thought just after you asked that question, were you asking that in regards to the newspaper, or were you asking that in regards to the commercial printing department?
The newspaper.
Well, in the newspaper, we haven't changed our typefaces too much. We have, in the last 15 years, changed them some, but not a great deal. You could tell the difference, but it's not a great deal. We have changed them a good bit in commercial printing, where it's required more than in the newspaper. So I guess I'd say that, yes, some, but not a great deal.
How I've noticed other papers, Plain Dealer, New York Times, some of these have very small print, some have larger print. Is there any trend or style, or is it just your own choice, the newspaper, publisher, editor, in regards to the style of paper or type?
Well, it's our own choice. We have you can select most any typefaces you want, but there are certain ones that most newspapers use, and they stay mainly in the boldface family.
Getting back to the printing industry, the printing that course I took in high school, we set type by hand for special, say, tickets and so forth. Is
sure.
This all machine now? Or
yes, it's all machine. I have a little handset type left, but it's difficult almost anymore to find printers people who say they're printers, that who know the California job case, who know the type case. So we set very little type by hand. Sometimes we'll get a certain face, we'll use it, or we'll get, we'll set something, some particularly large face. Large typeface we still will do by hand, but it has to be a large typeface. Otherwise, we set it all by machine. I can't afford to set type by hand.
Now,
we have wooden type we use for posters. This is a different ball game. We have some wooden type that's maybe 3 to 4 inches high. That is handset, but you use that only for the display purposes on a poster.
The next point, you're quite noted for your photography and your ability to take photographs and put them on the printed page. Could you explain this process?
Well, it's the ability of the photographer to get a good crisp black and white with contrast in the photo, and we have to be very careful in engraving, and then through the stereotype department we have to be very careful watching the temperatures of metal, things of that nature, to get a good casting from which we print on the curved plate for our rotary press. And I just don't know that I would want to elaborate much more than that, but that's about some substance of it.
Do you, in the average day, have a certain procedure or outline that you tell the workers, or a typical printing day in your shop?
Oh, typical printing day in our shop is, sending ads in the newspaper, making up pages, taking the pages once they are compiled, and making a paper mache matrix, casting the paper mache matrix, putting this curved plate on our rotary press, things of that nature, running the linotypes, perforating tape goes into the linotype for typesetting, cutting paper, buying paper in large sheets, cutting it down to smaller size for our commercial printing department presses, doing paste up, doing negatives, printing, addressing, wrapping, things of that nature.
Do you normally every day outline, or is your jobs carry over from one day to the next?
Oh, yes. Oh, sure, they'll carry over to the next day, sure.
Do you have a certain set clientele customer that repeats, that you automatically assume their business will be week in, week out, or?
Yes, we do, but we try not to, I try not to really count on them, because, you know, if they become unhappy and leave me for some reason, then it'd be a rather empty feeling. So we try not to really count on them, but we have many, many repeat customers in our commercial printing department as well as our advertising. We have advertisers been with us for years and years. But I'd rather have a lot of small customers than have one or two large customers. Because if you have one large customer becomes unhappy or decides to install their own printing equipment, it's goodbye a lot of business. So I'd rather have any number of small customers. I think it's better.
Let me state it in a different way.
All right.
What you essentially said is the fact that if you'd have a few large customers, they in a sense could dictate to you.
That is true, and or if they become dissatisfied, then that could mean a third of my commercial printing business, or something like that, you see. With our advertising in farm and dairy, we have lots and lots and lots of small ads, small customers, and that's the best way to have it. And in our job printing department, we have many customers that we're serving, and it's a better thing the whole way through than to have one or two big ones.
Can you give a little background history on the Lyle Printing Company, when it was started?
Oh yes I can. To me it's interesting because I knew the founder, I knew James Lyle, and I knew R.B. Thompson, who founded Farm and Dairy. We'll begin with Lyle Printing Company. In 1890, James Lyle, who was the son of a prominent doctor in Salem, started a printing company at the corner of Lundy and East 3rd Street. There's a rather large brick home there. And at that time, they had a carriage house in the rear and things of that nature. And he started the shop there with a treadle type printing press. In about 1895, he had four treadle printing presses and decided that it would be best if he could operate them by steam. So he installed a steam engine and with an overhead pulley type thing, and all the presses ran off of the overhead inline pulley arrangement. I can't think of the name that they use for this. He did this until 1903. At such time, he moved to the Gurney Block on South Broadway, which is now where Strauss Hirschberg had their department store. I believe on the second floor. And in 1914, and we'll stop now and leave Mr. Lyle on the second floor of the Gurney building. In 1914, R.B. Thompson, who had been the editor of the Salem News, decided he'd like to have his own publication. So he started Farm and Dairy. He needed a printer. And by this time, Lyle Printing had grown to the size and proportion that they could handle a newspaper. They had at that time a flatbed cylinder press and could print 4 pages of Farm and Dairy at a time on one side, and turn the sheet over and print one more. So he went to Mr. Thompson, and Thompson went to Mr. Lyle, and Lyle agreed that he would print his paper for him. After a few years, they became partners, and you can guess what happened. They, like many partnerships, could not get along, and Lyle sold out to Thompson. So now this takes us to about 1916, something like that. And Thompson, and R.B. Thompson, who had been editor of the Salem News before that, now was president of Lyle Printing Company. He moved the company to its present location at 185 East State Street in 1917. We have pictures of the building at the time they moved in, and certainly we have all the issues of Farm and Dairy, and it shows that building at that time. So Thompson moved Lyle Printing Company and Farm and Dairy to the present building in 17, and operated it here then until his death until 1940. 2 years before that, my father came and took the thing over from Thompson, and then operated it till the time of till his demise in 1958, and I took over at that time. But the company has been in continuous operation since 1890. I'm trying to think of anything else that I could add there. I would touch on my father for a moment. He came to Salem the first time in 1922 as advertising manager, and stayed on the job until 27, left and went to Pittsburgh and to Wadsworth and to Worcester, Ohio, and then back again in 38 when he assumed active management. Now, does that answer somewhat your interest in the history of the company?
Yes, that gives a pretty good background.
Well, I could add one more thing. In 1958, 1960, I bought the Town Hall Diner, which was right next door to Lyle Printing Company, and that changed our address then to 185-205 East State. We were able to gain the additional frontage and floor space where the Town Hall Diner had been. So we now have doubled our floor space.
Do you think there's anything more in the history of Lyle Printing that you would like to mention now, just sort of off the cuff?
Oh, yes. Yes, I would. For example, Jim Lyle drove the first automobile in a parade in downtown Salem. Sorry, I don't know just what year, but I do know that he drove the first automobile. R.B. Thompson had one of the first cars. I have a picture showing the mailbags in two automobiles in the front of the Strauss building about 1914. They were just jammed full of mailbags, ready to go to the post office and sent out. Farm and Dairy had always been sent to the readers by mail. Jim Lyle lived until, I believe, 1960. Died as, I guess it must have been 80-some when he died. He was an artist of sorts, was good at design work, and I do do have some original printing plates here from some brochures we did for the Buckeye Engine Company. Here, I'll show you one. Now, you'll notice that this is of interest. You can see it says the Buckeye Engine Company. You'll notice that it's on a heavy wooden plate, and this is lead, and this is electroplating over top of the lead. And this was done by a photographic method. They put this copper electroplating over top of this so that it would wear and last longer for impressions, because we would print direct, feel the weight of that. We would print direct from plate or from type matter right onto the paper. So we had to have something with a hard, durable finish. This is of great interest to me, and I'm happy to have it. We have other printing items here, printing plates, and here I'll show you the original masthead. Stay seated, I'll bring it over. There's the masthead of one of the early mastheads of Farm and Dairy. We print direct from that. Here is something that, here's a lead, or pardon me, wood plate. It's all, if you notice the hand carving in there for the word sail. This was used on the top of sail bills years ago. Print direct from it. These are all uniform height, known as type high. Type high height. And things of that nature. And I enjoy having these things, and they mean a great deal. A great deal to me. For example, here is an illustration of a car in the 30s, or late 20s probably, because there's a side mount. And this is a two-color thing. You print this color first, which is an outline of the automobile, then the solid, which you would print later to put the color of the car in. So these things are great fun, and you notice that this, too, is a copper coating. R.B. Thompson, who was the founder of Farm and Dairy, died in 1962. In 1940, he had great plans of retiring young because he thought pretty good in the newspaper business, and he sold out to a group in 1929. They incorporated the company at that time, changing it from Lyle Printing Company to Lyle Printing and Publishing Company. He sold it out. They didn't have too much money, so he held the paper and went to St. Petersburg, Florida. I feel sorry for him because he thought that he could sell out, these people would pay him, and things would go along all right. But in 1934 or 35, he had to come back to protect his investment and had to stay with it until about 1938, and his health was broken, and he died in 40, and it was just too bad because he had such high hopes of being able to plan his life, and it did not work out entirely for him. So that's something to remember. If you're ever selling a business, be careful how much of the paper you carry yourself, because you could end up coming back in a few years and taking over the business just to save your investment. I'm trying to think of other things that would be of interest. Many printers have worked here over the years. Nate Harris, who has the small printing company across from the junior high school, worked here at one time. There are just so many people who have worked here over the years. I feel as if it's almost, we are almost Lyle Tech as opposed to Lyle Printing and Publishing Company. But we have had a lot of people work here over the years, and it's been good training for them, and we hope we've helped them. I'm sure that after this interview is finished, I'll think of many more things to say. But Farm and Dairy has grown over the years. One time we printed the paper on a rag content paper in the early days, and then switched over to the newsprint that we have now. until 1939, we were 4 columns wide by 16 inches deep. And at that time, my father decided that we could easily go 5 columns wide by 16 inches deep, therefore selling another column of advertising. If you look at today's metropolitan newspapers, the columns are very narrow. Our columns are 2 inches wide, and most metropolitan newspapers have a column width of 1.5 to maybe 1 3/4 inches wide. Therefore, they can gain another column and sell more advertising. But we have kept ours at 5 columns wide. I also can remember when we would have a 16-page newspaper each week. I watched that grow until it became 24 pages, 28 pages, 32 pages. We thought then that 32 pages was what we would have to go because of expenses and what we thought we owed the subscriber. Now we're having 44 pages, 48 pages. We've had 56-page papers. This year, I suppose we've had 10 or 12 56-page papers, maybe more than that this year. So it's growing. And with few exceptions, our circulation has grown by 10,000 at least in the last 15 years with very little promotional effort. We have very few agents. People hear about the paper, they write to us, want to know how much it is, and or they'll see the rates, of course, printed in the masthead of the newspaper. They'll send their money in, and we'll send the paper to them, and that's the way it's grown. It's been easy, slow growth. It hasn't been overnight. It's been easy to cope with. And that's the kind of growth we like. Elvin Groves, our editor, worked for Farm and Dairy in 1930 when he was still in college at Ohio State in the agricultural school. And he graduated with a degree in agriculture and a degree in journalism. And he tells, and I've heard him tell many times, that he would be at the fraternity house and he'd have a deadline to meet to get to the Union Station with his copy to be sent to Salem, Ohio for a paper. And after he graduated from Ohio State, he came to Salem, I believe, in 34 and assumed the title of editor. And probably one of the youngest farm editors in the country at that time. And worked here until 38, I think it was. Left, went back to Columbus and had a government job for a year or two. Didn't really like it. Came back to Farm and Dairy for maybe 5 or 6 years. Went with another company for a few years and came back to Salem, and he's been with us ever since. We had a good many years with Farm and Dairy. He's well thought of in the community. He's been head of most every community, most every agency in the whatever. He is now in his second year as president of the Canfield Fair, and he'll do a bang-up job with them. So he's been with us a good many years, and is well thought of and just does a swell job. So he would be someone who should be mentioned in this interview. We had boy who died a year or two ago, Ruth Henry, who had been with the company for years and years as a bookkeeper, and then started our ladies section. She did it only because she thought it was good for the paper and not for any personal gain whatsoever. She felt it was good for the paper and she started it. Been going on ever since and certainly will continue.
these are the people, and just a few of my memories, these are the people who have helped to get this paper to where it is now. And for that and for their services and interest in the paper and interest in, well, I suppose for me personally, I am indeed grateful. They've been a great deal of help to me.
You were talking about community organizations that Mr. Grove belonged to. Just what do you feel is your responsibility to, say, the Salem community? As an individual, do you participate in any of the organizations, or?
Well, I'm in the Rotary Club, and I feel a responsibility to serve the city, serve the club in any functions that they may undertake.
Oh, and I'm interested in downtown beautification. I'm interested in the Salem Historical Society. I'm not active and probably will not be active, but I'm interested and will continue to be. I like history and local color, and any time that I can help promote that or preserve that, I will do that.
Oh, and I'm interested in antique automobiles, too, and I say, I expect that all kind of follows through.
You said that antiques, is your hobby in a sense, antique automobiles?
Yes, that's my main interest in hobby. It's my main interest outside my business. And I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. I've met lots of interesting people and just had a good time. Enjoy the cars and everything about it. I'm trying to ramble here for you some on our company. This building, the original part of the building, of course you know we have this we have a new front on the building. When I bought the Town Hall Diner building, which had become a hobby craft shop for a while, it was in not the best of condition on the outside. I needed to tie the two buildings together, and if you remember, there was an alley, a 10-foot alley in between. So before I bought the Town Hall Diner building, I had closed the alley and put a section in there for storage and things, and so I was able to get the Town Hall Diner, and we bought that thing, and then put the new front on so we could tie the thing together and make it look like one building. And I believe we've accomplished that, and thanks to Jack Vogel, the architect in Salem, we accomplished it in good style. It's an English Tudor appearance. And certainly was what I had wanted and had conveyed to him, and he did it just the way I wanted it. Originally, the original building, was built by some of the Silver family for a man named C.R. Baker, who had been a photographer and into lots of things, and he was an interesting fellow. I met him in his later life. He was up in his 80s when I met him, I think. He had owned or been interested in Salem's water department at one time, and I seem to remember him telling me that there were two water departments, one city-owned and one privately owned, and they do battle occasionally as to which one should have the rights in Salem. Well, getting back to my story, Mr. Baker sold Model Ts in this building back around from 1907 or 8 up until about 1912. And if you could have seen the building, and maybe you did see it when you came to Salem 10 years ago, you would remember there were two large plate glass windows in front. Well, the one side was a showroom, and the other side was an overhead door, or probably not an overhead door at that time, but a door that cars could go into and out of for service. And so this was a
big thing. We have old pictures showing employee parties and so on taken here back not too long after Mr. Baker gave up the Ford agency and our company did move here. But Mr. Baker told me some of the things. And also on the second story was the doctor's office. And you can see evidence that it was here because there are so many doors connecting various offices. And some offices will have two doors. And most of them have been covered by paneling now. You can see evidence of it. So there was a doctor's office upstairs and a Ford garage downstairs at that time. I think of lots of interesting people who have worked here and Linotype operators and having been here as a kid and watching some of these people. And it's been a great adventure. Enjoyed it so much.
Okay.
All right, some other things that should be noted. In 1940, Bob Wright, Robert L. Wright, had been plant superintendent for the company here for a number of years and decided he would open his own printing shop. So he added on to his garage behind his home on Woodland Avenue and started Wright Printing Company and operated the printing company there until the time of his death in the 50s. I can't tell you just when. At that time, Herman Linder, who is now our plant foreman and has been for 12 years, took over the printing department and ran the little printing shop for his for Mrs. Wright. Then Herman invited his brother-in-law, Vince Moore, to join him in the printing business. They were in a partnership for a number of years and moved the plant then from the Woodland Avenue location to the second story of a building owned by George Bowman on Penn Street. The company, Mr. Linder then, after being with Mr. Moore for several years, left his employ and came with Lyle Printing about 1960. The company then was changed from Wright Printing Company to Moore Printing Company, and it is still operated under that name and owned by Vincent Moore. So that should be noted as part of the printing history in Salem. Another company that was here for a number of years, starting right after World War II, and concentrating, specializing in lithography, was the Leyden-Hamel Printing Company. They did quality advertising brochures, going as far as Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and producing, again, quality work. One of their employees, well, two of their employees, Dan Buckman and Bruce Carlton, started a company, left the Leyden-Hamel Company, and started a company called Cardinal Litho. Their offices and plant was located on Jennings Street. That company lasted about 10 years, and maybe less than 10 years, and then they decided to sell out. They sold their accounts to Superior Printing Company in Warren, and their equipment was sold to me, Lyle Printing Company. I bought 75% of their printing equipment. I had been in the lithography end of it before, but only in the small size equipment. When the Cardinal Company went out of business, I bought their presses and so on, and was able to increase our capacity a great deal, and it was certainly easy to do this because the equipment was available right in Salem. And for a number of months, probably 12 to 15 months, I operated out of the old Cardinal Litho building a subdivision of this company known as Salem Litho on Jennings Avenue. I did not like operating out of two buildings and found it was better to be under one roof, and at that time then I bought the Town Hall Diner building and moved that equipment up here and got the thing under one roof. Whoever's compiling this will have to go back now on what I've said. I mentioned the Leyden Hamel Company. After Buckman and Carlton left the Leyden Hamel Company to form their company called Cardinal Litho, Mr. Hamel and Mr. Leyden sold out to the William Feather Company in Cleveland. And they sent a manager down here by the name of Bill Enyart. Enyart was here a number of years and left to go with another firm not related with printing, and another manager came in, and then the William Feather Company folded stakes in Salem and went back to Cleveland. They were very successful in Cleveland. It was not a good venture for them to come to Salem. One sidelight might be of interest that Dan Buckman, who was with the Leyden Hamel Company and then left with Bruce Carlton to form the Cardinal Litho Company, had worked for Farm and Dairy just before the war in 1940, just graduated from high school and sold some advertising on Farm and Dairy back in those days. I mention that only as an item of possible interest. I think of other printing companies in Salem. Oh yes, I mustn't forget Dodge Printing Company. In 1938, Howard Dodge came to Salem from Illinois to be the advertising manager of Farm and Dairy. He was with Farm and Dairy until 1946, selling advertising as well as starting some breed publications that my father had started and had asked Mr. Dodge to assist him. In 1946, Mr. Dodge went into the printing business on his own. He had purchased the house for this purpose and converted the house into a printing company right across from Stark Memorial, along where the car wash is located now. He was there in the printing business from in that location from about 46 until 55 perhaps, and he moved then to, he had many business problems and was never able to really get his business going for any number of reasons. Probably didn't apply himself maybe as much as he could have, but he then moved his printing company, which had become small then, to a location on South Broadway in the old Salem Engineering Building, and had a section of that, rented a section of that building. He lasted until 66, 67 maybe, and there was a sheriff's sale, and that was the end of it. The Internal Revenue Service closed him, and there was a sheriff's sale, and he's now living in Florida, I think maybe Fort Lauderdale, Florida or something. So that gives a little more information on some other printing companies that had been in Salem. At one time, the Dodge Company had several brief publications. He had successfully taken them from this company, from Lyle Printing, and they were published there. For one reason or another, he lost the publications and lost other general line of commercial printing and lost his employees, and one thing and another. One reason that so many printers, I said earlier that so many printers had worked here, right after the war, there was a veterans training program, and we hired any number of people who learned the printing trade here by that method. Herman Linder was one, Eugene Spack would be another, who's working for the Salem Label Company now. Another fellow would be Forrest Peppel, who works for the Salem Label Company. These three that I make mention of came out of World War II and came here on a training program. Again, Herman Linder is working again with Lyle Printing Company and has been for, I believe, 12 years. I think of other people who've worked here. Russell Gunn, who retired as a printer from the Salem News, worked for the Lyle Company for many years. And Joe Volk, who is a linotype operator for the Salem News, and I'm sure to retire soon, worked here as a linotype operator for years. Our employee with the most continuous service here is a lady named Mary Sikosi, and she's probably worked here 35 years as a continuous thing. Salem has been a mecca for printing, and I sometimes think because they've all worked here at one time and learned something and gone on to hopefully, at least in their mind, a better situation. We still have lots of printing companies in Salem, but not as many as we once had. I know your interview will include some of the other old established printing companies, and so you'll be getting something from that. I'm going to turn this off here.